Welcome to another edition of the Reengineering Your Finances podcast. On today's show, we're going to talk about why retirement planning is a little bit different for women. You know, it is actually International Women's Day in the month of March, and so it's the perfect time to reflect on perhaps the progress that women have achieved in the financial realm over the past century. But despite this, the path to retirement is still not without its own unique challenges for women specifically, and we need to recognize that. So join us for today's episode. We'll talk about several different factors that lead to obstacles and barriers that women specifically face in their retirement plans. We'll bring in Charles and get to it coming up next.
It's time for Reengineering Your Finances with the founder of CP Weldy Group, Charles Weldy.
Welcome to another edition of the podcast. Walter Storholt here alongside Charles Weldy, founder of CP Weldy Group, not only a certified financial planner, but also a CPA. And it is great to be with you this week, Charles. I hope you are ready to enjoy and have a great month of March, my friend.
Yeah, I can't believe March is right around the corner. Thank God for leap year. We got an extra day this year.
February feeling a little bit longer, suspiciously. There's an extra day that slipped in there. You're right. So it's pretty good stuff. Well, I think it's going to be a great show today as we talk about International Women's Day. It's on March 8th this year. So depending on when you're listening to the show, it may have maybe coming up right around the corner or already passed. But either way, a good time to reflect on this planning situation. First of all, we're going to kind of explore the big reason why, or the reasons why women have to kind of pay attention a little bit differently in the retirement planning process, Charles. But first, I just want to verify, is this true? Would you agree that women have different challenges perhaps than men when it comes to retirement planning?
I think so. I mean, you know, generally they live longer, you know, historically they've made less pay. You know, if things aren't set up properly, you know, there could be like some, you know, minor or major surprises. So there's definitely some challenges we all face, but the woman maybe a little bit more so.
Well, let's dive into some of those, and you already kind of teased that first one there. And we'll also hope to give some solutions, or at least perhaps sharing your insights, Charles, into how you help women navigate through these particular challenges. The first reality is that the gender pay gap definitely persists. Even though they make up almost half the workforce, women receive lower compensation than men across almost every occupation. Back in 2022 data, women earned 82 cents for every dollar earned by men. This is according to data from the Pew Research Center. Though various factors contribute to that difference in pay, the bottom line is that it exists, that there's lower income and it can limit women's ability to save and impact certain retirement benefits. So how have you seen the gender pay gap impact your female clients over the years, Charles?
Well, I think I'd say, you know, I'd segregate them into older clients and younger clients. So older clients, maybe the early baby boomers, those born in 1946, maybe through 1956. Those were the years that, you know, if you were a female, you know, yeah, you could go to college, but it wasn't really like a requirement or necessity where if you were a male, you know, basically that was expected of you. So as a consequence, you know, the way that the historical family used to be, you know, the woman stayed at home, the man went to work. And basically, you know, when the kids were at a certain age and the woman decided to go back to work, you know, for the most part, the careers were, you know, not really specified. They were more like retail, administration, things like that. And there was definitely like a gap in pay. Whether you're a woman or a man, those type professions, part-time jobs, getting back in the workforce, the employers would kind of pay you what the going market rate was. And for the most part, there was always a backdoor concern that, hey, if I hired a woman, and again, I'm not being sexist, I just think that this is the way the world was, there's a possibility that after I train her, you know, she might, you know, be, have a child, and, you know, basically all that training is for naught and they got to start all over again. So I think, you know, the men had an unfair advantage, you know, years ago. And today I think it's like completely different. You know, you look at the law industry, the financial planning industry, the accounting industry, there's really less of a gender gap. And that study by the Pew Research Center that was done in 2022, you know, a lot of the people in that study were people that, you know, back in the early baby boomer years, and I think things are shifting now, you know, where women are getting paid, you know, according to their, I guess, their skill level, not their gender.
Yeah, a lot of different reasons certainly go into that. And I think that's one of our other key points here that came from the data is that women are, even if life has changed a little bit over the last couple of decades, still women are more likely to face career interruptions. So on top of earning less, they generally take over the caregiving lead for children and also elder relatives. We can't forget about kind of that other end of the spectrum there in terms of caregiving. And this can result in fewer years of earned income as they take time away from the workforce. That causes women to miss out on years of retirement contributions, whether it be privately or contributing to Social Security. All of those things kind of compound and start to add up, don't they?
They do. I mean, when you think about how they compute Social Security benefits, they take your 35 highest earning years. You know, some of them are indexed for inflation, some aren't. But for the most part, if someone's working, raising kids for like, you know, 10, 12, 15, 20 years, you know, their formula for 35 years is going to really be greatly diminished. So their Social Security benefit may not be, you know, that as, you know, as good as someone that worked, you know, 35 plus years. And then, as you mentioned earlier, you know, obviously, if you're not earning the money, you're not putting money away in a retirement plan. So you don't get the power of, like, you know, tax deferred compounding over years. So inevitably, your Social Security benefit, you know, at a later age is not as high as it could be had you worked, you know, a full career, and your investments, you know, are not growing that much because they were underfunded. So it's kind of like a catch-22.
Great points. Yeah, these things compile on top of one another. You teased this in your first original comments there a couple of minutes ago, Charles, but we've got two kind of issues that also compile into creating additional problems. One, longer life expectancy. That's the one you alluded to. But let's lump divorce also into this conversation. Here's some stats, some data. According to the National Center for Biotechnology Information, women outlive men in almost every society across the globe on average. Really no disputing that. This requires more retirement savings to cover the additional years and often leads to also higher long-term care costs for women. In addition to that, divorce can also be a major setback because, especially for those who are relying on their partners for future financial support, they're kind of left in a further lurch. What, when you kind of look at those two problems combined, are some of the ways that women can protect themselves during the planning process from that possibility of the death of a loved one early and they still have several years to live, or going through a divorce, which can create kind of a similar problem?
Yeah, well, let's take death of a loved one first. I mean, you know, easier said than done, but for the most part, yeah, you know, there should be life insurance on, you know, the breadwinner. So if something happens, you know, he or she dies prematurely, the surviving spouse gets a nice tax-free death benefit that could, you know, supplement, you know, their lifetime income, you know, throughout the remainder of their life. That's number one. Number two, like, you know, for the most part, you know, long-term care is really important too. Now, you know, everybody wants it, nobody wants to pay for it, but, you know, there's ways that they can pay for it by just diverting some monies from, you know, traditional investments to maybe a long-term care policy that would provide long-term care in the event that, you know, in this case, the woman outlived the man by, you know, 15 years or so. So I think, you know, longer life expectancy, the two solutions are life insurance, you know, death benefit tax-free, and maybe long-term care on the surviving spouse. Now, as far as divorce goes, you know, for the most part, I would just say that in the event of an inheritance, you know, a lot of baby boomers are, you know, set up to get inheritances. I would just make sure that that money that was received was not commingled, you know, with other assets, that it was put in a separate account. So in the event of a divorce, as long as those assets weren't commingled, you know, whoever inherited it is really entitled to it. And that could go a long way to, you know, maybe making that divorce a little bit more palatable. Let's see, what else do I got here? Personal and separate savings accounts. So, yeah, they should have separate checking and savings accounts. You know, a lot of married couples combine their accounts. And, you know, if they do have separate accounts, there's not much in one or the other. You know, there's a bulk in a joint account. So I would advocate that they both have separate checking and savings accounts. You know, in the event of a divorce, you know, I've heard stories where, you know, it's impending that divorce is going to come. And, you know, the person that is planning the divorce is like stashing away money in this separate account, waiting for a certain number so that they can like walk away and maybe start a new life.
All great points. Unfortunately, the news doesn't get that much better for women here, Charles. They still have more obstacles to face if what we covered wasn't enough already. We also find that women carry higher debt, typically. For many retirement savers, no matter gender, outstanding debt can slow down the saving process, of course. But a study done by T. Rowe Price in 2023, just last year, found a notable gender disparity in debt, with more women holding debt across various categories, including credit cards, medical debt, and student loans, where 60% more women reported outstanding student loan debt than men. Can you expand on the way that outstanding debt impacts financial planning and saving for the future, and why this is just kind of another one of those nail in the coffin is too dramatic of a term here, but just it's another kind of just big hurdle that women have to jump over if this data is true?
Yeah, well, I mean, I classify debt in two categories, good debt and bad debt. So good debt would be like, debt on a mortgage payment. You have an asset to offset it. You know, maybe a car loan is not, it's not a bad debt because, you have an asset to offset it. And hopefully, the car is worth more than the loan on the car. But the bad debt would be the credit card debt, the medical debt. And sometimes, medical, it just happens. Credit cards, you got to be somewhat disciplined. The problem is that, there just should be a certain amount of your monthly gross income that should go towards debt service. And there's a formula by the Federal Housing Association. When you want to go in and qualify for a mortgage, they want to make sure that no more than 31% of your monthly gross income is allocated to your mortgage payment. So, if you made, I'm just making a number up because it's easy. If you made like 10 grand a month, gross income, 3,100 would be your mortgage payment, the max mortgage payment. And then all your other debt would be 43%. So 31 for the mortgage and maybe 12 for other car loan, credit card, medical, student loans. And student loans, they're somewhat in between. I don't know whether it's good debt or bad debt. It really depends on, where you went, what you learned, and, what you're doing with it. But for the most part, allocating money or having money committed to debt service really impedes your ability to accumulate other assets in other areas. And I would just try to adhere to the formula, the 43% formula, no more than 31% going to your mortgage payment and no more than 12% going to other debt. And that even might be a little high in my world, but, that's the FHA, and at least it's a starting point.
All good points across the board here. All right, we've got two more main points to hit here, Charles, to kind of dive into this conversation that we've embarked on today, retirement planning, different for women and some of the reasons why. The next would be a lack of financial confidence that women seem to have. This is a BMO Real Financial Progress Index study conducted a survey that found a sizable gap in how women reported being educated about personal finance from a young age. So this survey reports that only 53% of women felt confident enough to retire at their target age, and that 79% of women desired more access to financial literacy resources. So it's interesting because you have some of this like lack of financial confidence creating problems for women in financial planning and a clear desire for them to want to get more education and learn more. You must make that a central part of your company and your business, this education piece.
Yeah, I mean, education, there's a guy by the name of Nick Murray. I mention him a lot on various podcasts that I do. And he's a great mentor up in New York. And basically, he has a saying like, it says something to the effect that information is like all over the place. Where shall wisdom be found? So there's so much information that we don't know what's good information, bad information. What is the nuts and bolts that you really need to know in order to have confidence, in the area of finances? Well, obviously, I'm an advocate of the bucket planning process. And for the most part, if people could just like look at their finances and say, hey, I either have cash, I have fixed income, or I have stocks. There's really like three general categories of investments: cash, fixed income, and stocks. And I would just say that, I'm going to throw some numbers out, but whether your numbers are different, the relationship between each of these three asset classes is pretty much the same. Cash today, maybe, well, today's a little higher than normal, but I would say over time, maybe you get 2% in cash, right? You're not going to beat inflation if inflation's 3 or 4%. So cash is good for emergency purposes, but it's not going to beat inflation. And a lot of people have too much money in cash. Then we have fixed income. And fixed income, as a general rule, is kind of, you know, more predictable in terms of volatility than maybe equity stocks. And fixed income, you know, generally speaking, is like that middle piece where, hey, you know, we're going to make twice the amount that we're going to make in cash. So 2 times 2 is 4. We're going to keep abreast with inflation, not really conquer it, but we're going to really protect our purchasing power by having a certain portion of our money in fixed income. Then lastly, stocks. Stocks, you know, as a general rule, historically, you know, have beaten inflation, you know, by 2 or 3 times. And in my world, if I'm going to get 4% in fixed income, double that to 8%, that's what we can perhaps anticipate in stocks. So again, like cash 2, fixed income 4, stocks 8. Everywhere you go to the right of the risk-reward pyramid, so to speak, you're getting higher returns by taking more risk. And really the key is, you know, the people would have more confidence if they really had the right amount of money in the right particular investment asset classes, whether it's cash, fixed income, or stock. I generally find that people have too much money in cash, maybe too much money in stock too at times, and very little money in fixed income that, you know, they need to supplement their retirement income, you know, during a, you know, 25, 30 year retirement. So I just want to kind of end this lack of financial confidence with a formula. You know, I believe in the 4.5% formula. Now, you know, other advisors might say, hey, we believe in the 4% formula or the 3% formula. I'm using 4.5 because I've seen it work in my practice, depending upon, you know, what people have and where it's located. And what that means, Walter, is like, hey, if I have somebody that needs $45,000 a year from their investments, and they had $1 million in their investments, 4.5% of $1 million is $45,000. And how I determine how much they're going to need is I look at their Social Security, and perhaps they have a pension, and I add that up, and then I determine what they need on a monthly basis. And the difference is what we call the income gap. And in the example where somebody has a $45,000 a year income gap, they would need $1 million. If somebody had a $22,500 income gap, they would need $500,000. So the key is, you know, a lack of financial confidence really goes hand in hand with, you know, not really having enough information or the right information to make informed decisions. And I would just say that if most people had a bucket plan and had assets strategically located in cash, fixed income, and stocks, and they knew what their monthly nut was, so to speak, what their monthly income gap was, then they would know whether, you know, A, they need to save more, B, they need to spend less, or C, they're, you know, right in line with, you know, what they need for a 25, 30 year retirement.
All great points. And yeah, financial education is something that's at the top of your list and something that's very important. Definitely advise you to consult with somebody who's knowledgeable in this entire industry, of course, and has had a long track record of helping people get to and through retirement. And you want to work with somebody that is well qualified across the board. That's somebody like Charles, who has a CPA designation, of course, obviously a tax specialty in terms of his planning, and also a certified financial planner. One of the most rigorous trainings that you can do in the financial industry. If you have questions for Charles and want to reach out and have that conversation with him, just call 610-388-7705. Have an initial conversation and consultation about your financial plan and more. You can also go online to cpweldygroup.com. One more note here, Charles. Let's move the needle a little bit. Despite the strides women have made in achieving financial independence, they still face all these distinct financial planning challenges that we've kind of covered on today's show. It's all the more reason to create that personalized retirement plan with a financial advisor there to help you along the way. Guide you, keep you from making mistakes, all those kinds of things. And try to remember that it's never too late to actively engage in that financial planning journey, regain some control over your financial life, and protect against things that could serve as pitfalls or downfalls in your retirement plan into the future. Charles, any parting words based on our conversation today about how women have to plan a little bit differently for retirement and what they can do about it?
Yeah, I just maybe want to, you know, kind of tell a brief story that happened like earlier this week. I mean, what happened was a woman came into our office and her husband died right before Christmas of 2023. And, you know, she had a little bit of investments, not a lot. And he was highly leveraged in his real estate. You know, they obviously lived jointly in a house. And when I looked at the mortgage balance statement and I looked at, and I asked her what the fair market value of the property was, there was very little equity. And she was like really scared. And I basically said, look, you know, there's always a solution. You know, for the most part, you know, it appears to me that it might be very difficult for you to remain in your house. You're probably going to have to sell it. When you sell it, there probably won't be much, you know, walk away money. But, you know, with your current investments and, you know, maybe like making up a budget that, you know, doesn't really, you know, constrain you too much. But, you know, we kind of came up with a number of $5,000 a month is the max that she could spend. She's now out looking for, you know, maybe an apartment of $2,000 a month, $2,500 a month. And basically, there's a solution there, maybe not the one that she wants, but, you know, it's all math and science, and there's no way that she can stay where she's at based upon her current financial condition. But there is hope that she can move out and enjoy, again, you know, a 20-year retirement, you know, living within her means and not having that heavy burden of a household that she really can't afford.
That's a really good point, Charles, and somebody people need to definitely keep in mind as they're planning for the future. And appreciate you sharing those thoughts and that story with us today, as well as all the other great information. Again, if you've got questions for Charles, we have contact information in the description of today's show in case he didn't catch it moments ago. But again, I'll give the website out, cpweldygroup.com. Lots of good info on the website and ways to get in touch there as well. Charles, thanks for the help, and we'll look forward to chatting with you on the next episode.
Thank you, Walter.
There you have it. Another edition of Reengineering Your Finances in the books. And we'll look forward to checking up with you next time. Come back and join us for the next podcast. Thanks for listening. Financial planning and advisory services are offered through Prosperity Capital Advisors, PCA, an SEC-registered investment advisor with its principal place of business in the state of Ohio. CP Weldy Group and PCA are separate, non-affiliated entities. PCA does not provide tax or legal advice. Insurance and tax services offered through CP Weldy Group are not affiliated with PCA. Information received from this podcast should not be viewed as individual investment advice. Product discussions and illustrations are hypothetical in nature and will vary based on many factors, including but not limited to age, health, product, insurance carrier, and product design. You should consult the insurance carrier website and policy for detailed information. Content may have been created by a third party and was not written or created by a PCA-affiliated advisor and does not represent the views or opinions of PCA or its subsidiaries. For information pertaining to the registration status of PCA, please contact the firm or refer to the Investment Advisor Public Disclosure website, www.advisorinfo.sec.gov. For additional information about PCA, including fees and services, send for our disclosure statement as set forth on Form ADV from PCA using the contact information herein. Please read the disclosure statement carefully before you invest or send money.